All right, children, settle down. Settle down. Come on. We only have 2 days to get this right. Come on. All right, I need my boys on the left, and I need my girls on the right. All right, you already know the dance move, but I need you guys to focus. Black History Month's coming up. You got to do a great job in this performance, okay? All right, boys, I need you to do your monkey dance. Arms up high. Arms up high. Come on. There we go. Girls, move your hips.
A Better Place by Positive Light Ministry, Willis and Shante. And a shout out to Willis Boyd and Shante Duncan. Their short play about a Vietnam military veteran, Kiara in Wendell, would be one of the highlights at the second annual downtown military stand down. That said, Saturday, November the 16th, 2013. At the Vortex, located at 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. We will have more about the event in our community calendar. Welcome to the Coon Round Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with my co-host Earlene Anthony, coming at you from Skid Row Studio. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Coon Rhyme Report. This week on the Coon Rhyme Report, we will be hearing some creative voices from the Skid Row community, and I'm delighted to have with us in the studio musician Danny Singleton. Danny, welcome to the Coon Round Report.
Thank you.
Look, can you tell our listening audience, tell us a little about your background?
Well, my background. Mm-hmm. Well, I was born in a place called Heidelberg, Germany, on August 2nd, 1958. My father was a career army soldier. Mm-hmm. Well, served 30 years in the military, in the army, and our family moved around quite a bit. And I happened to be born there, and my parents were from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My father was born and raised there. My mother was born in West Virginia, and moved to Philadelphia at an early age, mm-hmm. and they met there, and our family, let's see. Well, basically, that's my origin. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, how was it going to? Do you have to go to how do you go to school when you like a military brat? Do they have high school on the base and all that kind of stuff? How they handle that? Or do you go to school in the closest town where you're located?
Yeah, it's more like that. Yeah.
Now, how was the language thing over there in Germany? You went to all English class?
It was an American on a base,
Now, did you pick up any German?
Yeah, speakers? I had German. I had German classes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you get a chance to speak And you're still...
people don't know this about me, but I happen to be a linguist. I'm a linguist myself. I study language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I study several languages, actually,
mm-hmm.
and including German, Spanish,
mm-hmm.
French, Italian, and a couple others.
Okay, so you...
people don't know that about me.
Yeah, but you can get by.
Yeah, but I started... I developed an interest in language in 1982. I was sent to in Germany in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think I'd like to study German a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and purchased some books and began learning phrases and, mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And that was the beginning of it. And I tried to use them off the base, by ordering stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. By talking to other German people.
Yeah, I still remember that stuff. But then, then I left. I forgot about that later because I was, when I came back to the States, I just I didn't have a chance, opportunity to use any German. So, but then I lived in a neighborhood where they had I lived in Newark, New Jersey, and mm-hmm. in my neighborhood they had a Spanish store. I think Puerto Rican, and I saw newspapers in Spanish, and I was curious. I said, what is this Spanish all about? Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to learn it. This was 1980. So I'd like to. I had an interest in it. And this was 1987.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I purchased. I didn't know how to go about it, but I purchased a newspaper. And I took it home, and I said, didn't know what to do. I used to turn on the radio. But then I ended up in Miami, and the beginning was I purchased a dictionary and a paper, and I started beginning to translate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Miami in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there just for a month and a half, and then I ended up back in New York. So I went to the New York Library, and I bought a book called a Living Language Course. And it had a dictionary and phrase book and stuff. So I began studying Spanish in 1987, and I've been with it ever since.
Mm-hmm. So you get a chance to speak a lot of Spanish.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
I read, write, and speak Spanish very well.
Oh, good at that. That's beautiful.
And and I discovered some other things about Spanish. When you know Spanish, you can know Portuguese and Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're very similar.
Italian is closer to Spanish, too. Similar language.
Yeah, they're very similar. You can hear a person that knows Spanish can hear Italian and understand quite a bit of it. Not
mm-hmm.
you miss a lot, but you understand a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I heard I was listening to Italian radio, believe it or not. They had it on a broadcast in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I was understanding, but I didn't. I said, what is this? This is Italian. So, I think I'll, brush up on a little Italian. So I did, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now I kind of.
Now, well, let me ask you this then.
Yeah.
I also saw that you got off into sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was in sports at a young age I think 9 years old. I started playing Little League baseball. I played several years. I played about 6 years of baseball. I played mm-hmm. Little League, P League, Little League, Babe Ruth League, high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and same thing with football. I played about 6 years of football.
In Germany?
Yeah, I started in Germany. Started mm-hmm. in Germany. And I was at the age of 9 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Our family was there from December 67 to December 70.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 to 12 years old. And, started playing sports there and continued when we came back to States and to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up in New Jersey. And
mm-hmm. Now, what was it like, the racial situation when you was in Germany?
At what time?
When you was growing up
in
Germany?
When I was a kid?
Yes, coming up in Germany.
What do you mean by that?
How did the different what was it like being an African American black man over in Germany at that particular time coming up?
I don't know. Race too much, but I just know it was well integrated.
Yeah.
Well, the base we lived on,
mm-hmm.
well integrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no problems like that or anything like that.
No. Yeah.
How did you become a musician? When did you get off into that?
Well, let's see. At the age of, when our family moved back to the United States in December 1970, we moved to Asbury Park, New Jersey. And for Christmas, I received a guitar. That was my first real instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It was an acoustic guitar. And that was 42 years ago. I still have that guitar, my first guitar ever.
Oh, you still?
Yep, it's in my mother's house in her attic.
Yeah,
I played it last December. I was back east. It's still plays.
Still in good shape.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Those strings on them. I said, I was telling him, I said, this guitar is 42 years old. I tell them all my nieces and nephews. I said, I play, you know.
So that was the first instrument that you learned was a guitar?
Yeah, the first, my first interest was.
And then how about the flute?
The flute, that came a little later. It happened to be in the family because my little sister received the flute at some point. I don't know what I don't know if she was, I forget what grade. I think fourth grade she was in, nine or something. And then I tried to jam with her. I didn't really pay it any mind, you know, early on. But I noticed it, and I heard her playing. I used to hear her practice because she played in school. Mm-hmm. You know, she played in the school bands and stuff like that. I didn't play any music in school at all. Mm-hmm. I played outside of school, and I had some lessons outside in corner stores.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see.
Can you play something for us now? Let's play a song for us now.
Okay, and I'd like to tell you how I got involved in that. Well, I used to, me and my sister used to jam. I used to try to get her to, you know, have a little jam session with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember a couple times I said, let me check that out. You know, let me check out your flute. And, you know, that's how it started a little bit. And the summer, way back in the summer, I started really playing flute back in the summer of 1978. That's what, 35 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's more to the story. I'll tell you more about how I really, you know, got into it.
What are you gonna play for us?
I don't know. let me just do a little improvisation first. You know. Does it sound any good? Time to do a little bit more. Okay, I have a song prepared. Okay,
go ahead.
It happens to be, it's a tune by Stevie Wonder that I really love.
Okay,
it's called Bird of Beauty. Let me see if I can get through this. I have time to do it.
Yes.
Thank you. cut it short, but that's a little bit of bird. That's a little bit of bird of beauty.
Is that your favorite instrument?
Although I started on guitar, I kind of favored the flute a little more. Now I had a different inspiration for playing. I was I don't know. There's a story behind it. I happened to be on a plane.
Yeah.
And I headed to Germany again, this time for a visit, just for a visit for a month. I was going there to visit my family. They happened to be over there, in December 1970. And I was listening to, had the headphones on, listened to some music, and they had about 10 songs on the track, and it kept coming around. But I heard this song that had a flute in it, and when it came on, I heard something, and I heard a little solo, and then woke me up. It blew my mind. I heard this flute playing. And I thought I heard angels outside the plane. I'm serious. It's hard to describe, hard to explain, but it's just, and then I didn't know who it was or what it was. You know, I found out later who it was. It happened to be a jazz flutist named Hubert Laws.
Hubert Laws.
He's great.
Is that one of your favorites?
Hubert Laws.
How about, it's another flute player. Is it Yusef Lattie or something like
Lattie.
That?
Yeah, he's great too. I listened to him a few times.
Hubert Laws is
the... that's the first person I heard that inspired me to really want to get, pursue the flute.
One of the best players. Let's talk about your Air Force experience. Tell us, how did you come about going into the Air Force, and talk about your experience in that?
Well, I didn't go in the Air Force right out of high school. I went like 4 years later. Mm-hmm. I was working. Let's see. I had a job at a fast food restaurant in Philadelphia, and it was a Burger King, as a matter of fact. And I did that. I think I worked there for a year. And I don't know. I was walking down the street one day, and I saw the recruiter poster, and I saw planes going up, and talking about come join the Air Force. And I looked into it, and they ended up joining.
What were your MOS? What was your job in the Air Force?
The title was Munitions System Specialist. Mm-hmm. And I worked in a bomb depot. I had to do with storage and handling of bombs. Mm-hmm.
Was that during the time of war?
No, that was peacetime. Mm-hmm. It was peacetime. It was in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now.
From January, yeah.
How did you first come to Skid Row? Let's talk about that for a little while.
Okay. My first time in L.A. was... I came here in June 1986 for the first time, and the bus let me off right there downtown. It was at 7th and...
The old Greyhound bus station on 6th in Los Angeles.
And that's what I knew of Los Angeles, right downtown. You just get out and walk around.
Yeah.
This is Los Angeles, okay? And then people told me, start telling me where to do around, in the area where things were. If you want to get a hot meal, go to the mission, the L.A. mission. And the missions were spread out then.
They were different.
They weren't all close together like they are now. They moved them all together. But the Union Rescue Missions was way on 3rd Street somewhere. And Los Angeles Missions was 7th and something, Maine, or Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They were spread out.
I don't think they had the Midnight Mission yet.
Was there.
It was there.
I don't know. It's in 86. But it was definitely, it was at 4th Street later. It was there. It was there. I remember from being, because I got kicked out. I got kicked out one night in 86 because I washed my socks. They told me, they said you can't, you weren't supposed to, I snuck and washed the socks and I got busted. And they kicked me out. But I had a little tent. I had something that I laid on the sidewalk. I had a sleeping bag.
And I know most of the homeless during that time, they used to have the 99-cent movies up and down Main Street and all of that.
Movies?
That ran all night. Where most of the homeless stayed at. A lot of
I remember those theaters.
They're still around. They they redoing them, refurbishing them now. A lot of Palace,
yeah.
Globe, all up and down.
Yeah, I remember those theaters sitting all night. They had some on Broadway, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were your thoughts on Skid Row when you first came? What are your thoughts on Skid Row and the homeless down there?
I don't know. I don't know. I thought it was nice that they had all those the missions there to help out people, you know. And I thought that was a good thing happening, a good deal going there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the missions, you can go get a hot meal and get a bed if you need one. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, they cut back on services now, though. I think they used to have more service beds like that back then. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a different. What do you think? What's the biggest challenge for the musicians down here in the Skid Row area?
Mm-hmm.
What
do you mean by that?
The biggest struggle that they have being a musician and down, because you know we know a lot of the musicians down here. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of musicians that go through programs down here, because you know a lot of them get involved in the substance abuse out in the world. And this is their chance to clean up in some of the programs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I know you interact with a lot of the musicians down here in different bands and stuff. Can you talk about that? How is that? You know, how did you get in? And then you also, one of the things I noticed about you mm-hmm. is that you can play with a lot of the jazz musicians, the blues musician, mm-hmm. but also you also play with the praise team, the right. gospel team.
Right.
And mm-hmm. can you talk about that a little while? What's the difference in playing in the church and playing some jazz or playing some blues?
I don't know. I think they're all the same to me. You know, music mm-hmm. I love music. I love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so similar, you know, gospel and blues and jazz, I think they're related. They're closely related.
You know, mm-hmm. like how about the interaction between the audience, the interplay between the audience and the musician?
Mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. Can you come up just a little closer to the mic? Now, talk about how did you first come playing with the praise team?
Oh, that started when I went to a Bible study. It's been 6 years now. And I happened to have this instrument with me in a bag. But I went to the Bible study. And when the Bible study finished, they start rolling out these instruments. You know, people start coming out with stuff. And I said, what's going on, a jam session? I did. I said, they're having a jam session. I said, I think I'd like to get involved, join it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, I said, what's happening here? And they said, and then I started meeting people like Joseph Warren, you know, music director. Mm-hmm. And I think he told me, yeah, this is the praise team. He said, well, you can be involved in, you know, would you like to be involved? And I said, yes, I'd like to. And that was the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been there 6 years now.
6 years. Yeah. Do you also go over to the karaoke and play over there?
Yeah. I was there 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I played. Yeah, I jammed with about 10 singers. They liked it.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to go Wednesday night.
Okay.
I didn't make it last week. I had to go be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But
that was fun. How do you compare the musicians in the praise team with the musicians that you play out, like with the jazz and the blues?
I would compare them.
Same quality, some of them better.
I don't know. They I don't know about the same. You know, mm-hmm. I think this musicians. Let's see. Horn players. What do you mean? The quality or the musicianship?
The quality. You know, some people have just the gift. Because I know Highland. You know Highland also.
Highland Bird.
Highland. He played with because I know one of his regular things is. He played in the church. I used to ask him the same thing. He played in church on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
but he also Saturday night he's in the he can play in the jazz clubs. He played in the blues clubs and all that kind of stuff like that.
Staples Center.
Yeah, playing around at the Staples Center and all that kind of stuff like that. Yeah. Well, and we're trying to get Brother Joseph up in here, too. He said he's going to bring a couple of musicians up in here so we can sit down and talk about the praise team, the whole history, and all of that. Yeah. Now, how about your other family members? Your sister, what did she go on to become a musician? The one that played
flute?
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. She put it down after high school, and I don't think she didn't pick it up. She works in the medical field. She's an electrocardiogram specialist. Yeah, mm-hmm. doing that for 25 years or more.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are your thoughts on the homeless problem?
Homeless, I don't know. I was thinking about that today, and I think that can be solved. You know, I think there's money. That can be cleaned up. I believe it can. I think there's a lot of this money there that's just not being done. I don't know. It's just, I don't have the money, but there's money that exists. There's money out there for it to.
You mean to get people off the street?
Get people off the street. I don't know. I don't know how many people are on the street, right now at any given time. But
according to the stats, at any given times, there's between 80 to 100,000 people. That sleeps on the streets of L.A. in the county of Los Angeles.
In the whole county.
Yeah. And that's a lot of people to see. 100 to 80,000 people living on the streets. And the ironic thing about it is the fact that Los Angeles also have one of the highest rate of millionaires that lives out here. The highest rate of millionaires. And then at the same time, you got all of these people living in the streets and stuff like that. I agree. I think something can be done to solve the homeless problem in the Skid Row area and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe we can.
I mean, they can build a bigger, giant mission, with more beds or something. I don't know about 80, 100. How many people?
80 to 100,000 people.
100,000 beds. That's a lot.
That's
a lot, but
And see, you being a military veteran, and we always felt that the first step in solving the homeless problem was make the homeless problem the homeless veteran problem. Okay. And then get the federal government to subsidize a study to find out a solution to the homeless problem. In other words, put up the money and get the best mind, create a think tank, and then the solutions that come from that, roll it out. Yeah. For the rest of the homeless population. That's something that's long-term. But something that's short-term that we always felt that the community could do is get some of these interfaith organizations, these churches, to get some of this city property, all these empty city properties, and begin to bring people from the Skid Row area and make them a part of the church, their masjid, the synagogue, whatever like that. Oh. I think it's going to take that effort because, we've been working now in the Skid Row area now, 8, 9 years or something like that. And I think the major problem in the Skid Row area is not that you don't have a lot of resources. Okay. It's just these resources have become overwhelmed with so many people down there that don't need to be down there. They're mostly down there because of economic thing, because of... they just lost their job, or they just lost their house, or they just coming out of prison. Mm-hmm. And then you also got a huge amount of mentally ill people. Mm-hmm. And I think these are the ones that they should concentrate on because it's the mentally ill people that need to be around their support system. See, and for what happened, you got all of these normal people who problem is just, it's a money problem, financial problem, and they find themselves stuck down in these SROs where they paying $50 and $60 a month. Mm-hmm. Why pay $800 or $900 a month out in the community when you can get a pad, a SRO for $50 or $60 a month? But at the same time, that jams it up, so many of the people that we've seen land in the streets are people that's dealing with mental problems. And these are the ones that I always felt that should be in these SROs like that. Yeah. But anything you want to say on that, Darlene?
Well, when I was homeless, I just noticed a lot of the, with the missions that I lived in.
Yeah.
A lot of times, let's say when donations come in, a lot of it wouldn't get to the people that really needed it, the people that lived in the mission. A lot of it would stop at the staff because I was working like a volunteer, whatever, distributing or, you know, sorting out things. And a lot of times the staff would come and get out of the donations what they wanted.
Yeah.
And then what was left over, they would distribute to the residents that lived there. So I think a lot of the homeless problems is it stops at the top. Probably the salaries, the staff, and so on. Because if there was no homeless, a lot of these people, the staff and so on, would be out of a job. So I don't think no one is really in a hurry to solve the homeless problem. They talk about the homeless, the homeless, the homeless. But, you know, they're really not out to solve the homeless problem because a lot of the upper people with staff and so on, they would be out of a job.
And like I forgot to mention, I have some experience being homeless, actually a few years. You know, I had to live outdoors.
Talk about that for a minute. How did that come about, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I don't know. I didn't know where to go. I didn't have the money to rent a room or apartment, and so I was forced to, you know, find a place to stay, and a spot to sleep, and I did. I found a couple good spots, and I stayed there. I tried to stay. I ended up staying for an extended period of time, you know, one or two, but the last place, for the last 11 years, I've had a place, a room. I've had a room. Now I'm in SRO. Our building was converted to SRO about a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago. It's called the Roslyn Hotel. But a friend, I had a storage in Hollywood, and I asked a friend, I said, "Where, you know where I can get a room at anywhere?" Somewhere. He said he preferred me to the Frontier Hotel
on Fifth.
On Fifth. Mm-hmm. But that was May 2002. That's when I moved in there. I've been there ever since, 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved across. I was 4 years there, and I moved across the street to the Roslyn, and I've been there 7 years.
Yeah, because the old Frontier used to be something else. It was no joke down there at that Frontier.
But when I rented that room for that month, I felt so relief. I got in there. I said, "Oh, look, I have a place for a month." But I ended up staying there 4 years. I was relieved. I said, "Wow, this is great." You know, I didn't really know the reputation of the hotel. I found out later. You know, it was a crowded hotel then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't too bad. I thought it was pretty cool. They had a stores down at the bottom. Mm-hmm.
A
place like a microwave downstairs you could use, and they had a laundry room.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, and the other stuff, I don't know.
I stayed at the Alexander for a couple of years myself, right on that corner.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always felt that, you know, one of the things that they always talk about in relationship to the homeless problem, they always utilize the term affordable housing when it comes to the homeless problem.
Yeah.
And I just recently began to understand that that's a term that really don't describe the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a better term is low-income housing instead of affordable housing, because a millionaire can afford, you know, you could have people that make $1,000 a year. What's affordable housing for some people is different from affordable housing for another group.
Mm-hmm.
But low-income housing, you know, I think that's at the center point of one of the causes of the homeless problem. And maybe we get a chance to talk about that a little bit deeper. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we come back and talk to our guest, musician Danny Singleton, and I'll play a few more songs.
This is the community calendar for the month of October. Tuesday, October the 8th, That's tomorrow, Tuesday, from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop will continue once again. And this workshop is open to veterans as well as non-veterans. And the location of the Vortex is 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. That's right at the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. The Metro bus number 60 and 66 stop right at or near the corner. And the participants in the workshop are currently being trained to be stage managers. And if you would like more information on this event, you can call 213-479-1764. And this is a two-day event, Saturday, October the 12th, and Sunday, October the 12th. The Los Angeles Poverty Department present. This is a festival for all Skid Row artists. It's from 12 noon to 4 p.m., and it's at Gladys Park. It's a free event, and this is the fourth annual festival for Skid Row artists. And there will be featuring more than 80 artists living and working in Skid Row. They will assemble in Gladys Park. And Gladys Park is located at 6th and Gladys Street, featuring rap, reggae, gospel, rock, dance, poetry, art exhibits, drama, and much, much more. If you want more information or want to participate, contact Austin at the Los Angeles Poverty Department.org or 310-923-5819. An upcoming guest on the Qumran Report on October the 14th, we will have Mitch Greenhill and Lee Beck. And they will be talking about history of music and improvisational and much, much more. And on the 21st, we will have OG and Company. He will be talking about the 3-on-3 basketball and a new line of Skid Row clothing. And we're asking you to save this date, Saturday, November the 16th at 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., the second annual Downtown Los Angeles Stand Down will be presented. And the location will be the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. And if you or your organization would like to participate, you can contact Judith Bowman at nomoretime2write@gmail.com. Or you can give her a call, 626-703-1230. And we will have much more information about this event on upcoming shows. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And a reminder, the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Now, at this time, I would like to introduce a new section of the Qumran Report entitled Community Comments, where we will hear from some of the many organizations that's contributing to the community and how to contact them. This week, our community comment will be from Shante Duncan of Positive Light Ministry.
Positive Light started programs and started doing stuff for kids and youth in 1998, and we were formally established as a nonprofit in 2004. We are a catalyst for inspiring the youth and anyone else who will listen, creating opportunities and giving hope to all who will participate. Mm-hmm. PositiveLight.org, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/wearepositivelight.
Okay, that's Shante Duncan, Willis Board, and Denise Board, who's doing such a great job working with young people over there at Positive Light Ministry. Now we're back with our in-studio guest, Mr. Musician Danny Singleton. And Danny, let me ask you this. Can you talk about what are your thoughts on the homeless veterans? What's happening with veterans who are homeless? because there's a lot of homeless veterans in the Skid Row area.
I know, but I heard of this program called the VA Section 8. They call it VASH.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that that's a great, good program mm-hmm. to help veterans get housed.
You know, have you dealt with them?
Yeah, well, I attended not a seminar, well, something like that about the...
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think? Because, see, a lot of veterans who are dealing with issues, you know, they're dealing with so many issues from the
substance abuse and stuff.
Yeah, substance abuse or memories and stuff from the stress,
you know,
post-traumatic stress from the military service.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of them, these are the ones that I'm talking about that need to be around the support services and stuff. And these are the ones that's laying in the streets and stuff like that. But you're right, the VASH program is a good program. There are a lot of resources. That's one of the reasons that we're doing the military stand down on Saturday, November the 16th at the Vortex, because we're bringing all of these VA services right down to the Vortex and make them available to veterans. And at the same time, they'll be bringing clothes, et cetera, like that. Hygiene kits would be food, entertainment. It would be medical, it would be dental, be legal help, or anything that the veteran would be need on that particular day.
Excuse me, what's the Vortex? What is the Vortex?
The Vortex is a new location that we're working on. It's right on the corner of Santa Fe mm-hmm. and Olympic.
Mm-hmm.
And the address is
2341. East Olympic Boulevard.
Yes. And it's a spa. It's got a nice stage in there, studios. We're trying to make it available mm-hmm. to musicians, especially the musicians in the downtown Skid Row area. Mm-hmm. The one of the pioneer musicians in the punk rock scene, his name was Gazer X.
Mm-hmm.
And we had him right in here to do some interviews. He just completed a studio mm-hmm. right over there for right. musicians to come over there to do something. That's where we do our workshop at, over mm-hmm. at the Vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
And the Metro bus number 60 mm-hmm. or 66. Well, it stops right at the corner.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get back into the interview, what else you gonna play for us?
Don't know.
You wanna play something else? You gonna play something with the guitar for me?
So many songs that I have no idea. Well, but I have an idea.
Okay, play something for us.
But let's see. I like this tune. This is kind of
okay. Danny Singleton playing the flute.
Yeah. this is a tune called "Once I Loved." And let's see if I...
Tell us a little about your future plans. What are your future plans as a musician? What do you would like to accomplish as a musician?
Well, I'm hoping to get a few more gigs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Recently I worked a festival, a nice. I have a friend that's works with the Korean community,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of working with him now. And we did a festival at the in Koreatown, about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. That was nice. I got to play with two bands. I played with an American band and a Korean band. That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Playing the flute?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a big old Korean festival. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was that like? How is that playing with an American band and a Korean band?
They're almost about the same because the Koreans were playing American music.
Mm-hmm.
They played three songs they played, the songs they played are American songs that I know them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I played with them before that, before the festival at a club, I think twice they played. But they're playing American songs. I think they do some Korean songs, but I haven't done that with them yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think they do them. But the tunes I know I was familiar with.
You know, did you ever get a chance to play with Aardvark Jamal?
Yeah.
I think you came over to play with him at the Exchange. And what do you think? Because I thought he was a great blues musician.
Right, it was great. Yeah.
Now, what kind of adjustment do you have to make when you... I've always wondered about this because I've talked to different musicians, mm-hmm. and I asked them, what kind of adjustment do you have to make when you sit in? When you're sitting in the audience and they up there jamming and all, they're getting down to jamming,
mm-hmm.
and then they may give you a nod and you get up with your flute and come jam in. What kind of adjustments you have to make? Or you just get in with the flow?
One thing that makes it easier to work with, to do that is that if you know the keys, all the keys on your instrument,
mm-hmm.
that way you don't have a problem because they call it whatever key it is you can work with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps to know all the keys,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. And
mm-hmm. So do a lot of musicians in the Skid Row area, are they trained to know the keys and all of that?
Yeah, there are a lot of good musicians in the Skid Row area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you met a lot of musicians that was just gifted? I mean, just had the gift down there in the Skid Row area.
I'm trying to recall. Yeah, I'm sure I have. I'm just trying to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. so. Yeah.
Now just a couple weeks ago, we was talking to a great musician, vocalist, that we had him in here, Dante.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dante Chambers. We were talking to Dante, and I was asking him what he thought was the most important thing in relationship to, or what advice would he give those trying to break into the music field.
Right.
And I think he said something like the importance of working on your craft. The importance of constantly working to get better on whatever instrument you play. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Rehearsing. Yeah. So do you have time to rehearse a lot? Do you put time off in the day to rehearse?
Yeah. I try not to over practice, but I put a little practice in, because like last night.
Mm-hmm.
I like to listen to K-Jazz, the jazz station.
Mm-hmm.
And, I like jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a new song last night that was on there. And just by
listening and playing along with it?
Yeah. I picked up, pulled out the instrument and started playing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I found out who it was. And then I searched on the YouTube and on the computer, I think today.
Mm-hmm.
No, I went yesterday and found out who it was. I wrote it down, the name of it. There was one song by Horace Silver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's called The African Queen.
Horace Silver.
From Cape Verdean Blues. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wrote it down. African Queen.
Mm-hmm. Great
that
musician.
That's a pretty...
What other musicians that you like that really influence you a lot?
I like so many, but one of my favorite groups of all time is Kool and the Gang, and I like their horns. I like their horn player. Mm-hmm. I think think it's Ronald Bell. I love him.
Because of the combination of the music, Kool and the Gang, because they definitely brought in a different sound.
They had, I just love, I love their playing, their style. Like Ronald Bell, the saxophone player. He was a multi-instrumentalist. He played saxophone and keyboards and stuff like that. He was a Robert Kool Bell has played bass. That's Kool and the Gang, and he's. Mm-hmm. But his brother was Ronald. Ronald, mm-hmm.
and he's great musician. Yeah,
it was great. That's one group, and mm-hmm. others. I kind of love like Parliament. Parliament Funkadelic, and Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Great musician.
Yeah,
Earlene.
James Brown.
you have a question you want to ask Danny?
Love James Brown.
Wow. Let's see. Yeah. Of all the groups you played with, the bands, probably some of the people we know, who do you like playing with? Who do you really, when they call up and say, hey, Danny, come and play with us, who do you really like to go up and jam with? Anybody particular?
Mm. Have you played with Rose Scales yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've sat in with Rose before a couple times. Uh-huh. Over the years, a few times, way back years ago, and then more recently.
Mm-hmm. With the flute or the guitar?
More the flute.
Mm-hmm. How is it working with Rose Gale?
It was good. It was a good experience. Yeah, she's a great musician.
She's so professional. Everything has to be so. She's great.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good place to
the world
too.
Stage.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of great musicians that show up
come
there.
Through there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All kind of instruments, everything.
Okay, let us give you some closing comments. What you want to talk about, and then also give your contact information for those who would want to have you out as a musician.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Any closing comment, anything that you want to say about the musicians in the Skid Row area, anything like that?
Well, I would say to stay at it, keep at it. If you love it, continue to do it, to practice, pursue it. And there are opportunities out there, to perform, and to just continue to stay with it.
And then what is your contact information for those who want to contact you for a gig or something like that?
Okay. Here's my email address. It's my name, DannySingleton82@yahoo.com. And I check that about 6 days a week, 5-6 days a week. Yeah. DannySingleton82@yahoo.com. That's my email address. And should I give a phone number?
Yeah, you can give a phone number if you want to those that want to contact you, musicians.
Okay. The number is 732-912-5279.
Yeah.
732-912-5279.
Have you talked to Highland Bird lately? Because I just got contact information from him that he got a reggae band that he's jamming with now.
A reggae?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Reggae.
All right, then. Thank you very much, a musician. Danny.
Can I close out with one of my originals? Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead. Close out with... Yeah, this is Danny, and I want to extend a special thanks to Danny Singleton. He's going to play one of his originals.
It's called A Place in the Sky. I put this together a long time ago.
That's Danny Singleton playing in the background. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. From your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. Thank you, Danny Singleton. Danny Singleton. Great interview. Great.
All right, children, settle down. Settle down. Come on. We only have 2 days to get this right. Come on. All right, I need my boys on the left, and I need my girls on the right. All right, you already know the dance move, but I need you guys to focus. My kids are not coming up. You gotta do a great job in this performance, okay? All right, boys, I need you to do your monkey dance. Arms up high. Arms up high. Come on. Here we go. Girls, move your hips. Langston Hughes. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow.
You are listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
Can you please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe.
Hey, this is Eddie Solis, producer and host of Los Angeles Nista. Make sure you listen to the show live every Monday night, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at SkidRowStudios.com. And make sure you download the Skid Row Studios app for your iPhone.
Who's C1?
300. This ship is top of the line. It's called G-13. It's genetically engineered by the U.S. government. It's extremely potent for the completely male eye. No paranoia.
Is that what we smoked last night?
This is LA.